Cavalcade of Kings. George the Third, Part Two. Cavalcade of Kings. It is the year 1765 and the fifth year of the reign of George the Third. He'd lived a very simple life with his wife, Queen Charlotte, who shared her husband's love of the country and farming. George was honorable and religious, but he wanted more than anything to choose his own ministers. His hatred of the Whigs was shared by the people. George never saw the greatness of Chatham and turned this great statesman and his contemporary, the Duke of Newcastle, out of office as soon as he could. In 1763, he made peace with France, retaining Canada and other concessions for which England had fought so bitterly for 7 years. George's blunders caused much trouble at home, but the worst mistakes he made were in dealing with our American colonies. At the moment, we find the king conversing with his prime minister, George Grenville.
Chatham, Chatham, that name. I'm tired of hearing it.
He is a very capable man, sire.
Capable, but untrained. I admit, Grenville, he threw himself into the task of making England successful where before she had failed. I don't wish to detract from his achievements, but to attribute to Chatham all that our armies have accomplished in India and Canada is absurd.
The people regard him as the savior of England, sir.
Are Robert Clive and Hawke products of Chatham's genius? Wolfe's conduct at Rochefort, where he alone emerged with any credit, was surely not inspired by Chatham, who had blundered so terribly. Is it not a reflection on Amherst's valor and strategy to say that he would not have effected the capture of Louisbourg if Chatham had not been in office? He's an actor, a demagogue. I do not like his high-flown phrases and the theatrical attitudes, nor his preposterous assertion to the Duke of Devonshire. I know that I can save the country, and I know no other man can.
Oh, the audacity of the fellow.
Chatham was called to the ministry by the people, sire.
They worship him.
Enough of Chatham, my eye.
Sire, are you not feeling well?
No, Grenville. For weeks now I've suffered the most agonizing pain in my head. It comes and goes, but never leaves me entirely in peace. Sometimes I think it will drive me mad.
Sire, I beg of you to consult your physician.
That's a duty I have not neglected, Grenville. His medicine has not improved my wretched condition, but his words have prepared me for the worst. Grenville, a terrible shadow hangs over your king. I pray it will not strike me down before my work is done.
I don't understand, Your Majesty.
No matter. Let it pass. We have important business to discuss.
Sire, I beg of you to rest. You work too hard. The strain of the war...
Yes, the war. And its reaction on our American colonists. That is the question I wish to discuss with you.
But, sire, you are a sick man. Please do not drive yourself so hard. Our business can wait.
No. We will attend to it now. It is of the greatest importance to the state. My illness, of none but to myself.
As you will, sire.
Now, regarding the war, Grenville. During its 7 years' course, the 13 English colonies in North America helped us to drive the French out of Canada.
They but did their duty to their motherland, sire.
Quite. It has been a very expensive war, Grenville. And I think the colonists should pay something towards it. We could perhaps ask them to make a voluntary contribution.
Sire, to proceed along these lines would be most illogical. If it is left to the colonists to make a contribution, they will not give a tithe of what they should pay.
Perhaps you're right. Have you any alternative plan?
Yes, sire. I suggest that Parliament orders the Americans to use stamped paper on which they write legal documents, as is the law in England.
Yes. That might accomplish our object. Put it before the House, Grenville. Of course, my American colonists might refuse to be taxed by the Parliament at London because they send no representative to it.
They are British subjects, sire, and must abide by the laws made by the British Parliament.
Quite true, Grenville. Oh, my head. The hammers of hell are beating a tattoo upon my brain. I can't stand it, Grenville. It's driving me mad. Mad like Margaret Nicholson, who tried to stab me 2 years ago. Grenville! Grenville! My enemies weren't satisfied with that. Now, they're trying to poison me. Poison me, do you hear?
Oh, sire, I beg of you to calm yourself. No one is trying to poison you.
They are, I tell you. Those cursed apple dumplings they set before me at luncheon were full of poison, but I didn't eat them. No, Grendel. I was too cunning for my would-be assassins. I placed them in my napkin and later buried them near the sundial in the gardens. But they were poisoned, I know it. Apple dumplings. They've often puzzled me, Grendel. How does the apple get inside the dumpling? Answer me! Answer me, or I'll... Oh, my head. Oh, God, my head.
The king's illness lasted 2 months, in which his reason was affected temporarily. When he had recovered, he once more took up the reins of government, and the next 10 years proved arduous ones for him. At the moment, we find the king walking in the gardens of the palace with Queen Charlotte. The king is very worried over the outrageous conduct of his son, George, Prince of Wales.
Aren't the roses beautiful this year, George?
Very beautiful, Charlotte. Would that decency and morality thrived in the heart of our son as the roses thrive in our gardens. And I fear he is degenerating into the most polished young blackguard in London.
It's the profligate creatures he associates with. Have patience with him, my husband. He's so very young.
Patience? He's just a vain, selfish, pleasure-loving, vicious young rake. He needs a sound thrashing to bring him to his senses.
George, something is underlying all this. What has he done to cause you to speak so harshly?
What has he done? I'll tell you, although it's not a fit subject for your ears. Some time ago, he became entangled with a Mrs. Robinson, an actress who obtained a bond from him for £20,000 and letters which he threatens to make public.
The woman's a vile blackmailer. She should be exposed. My poor boy, how terrible that he should have fallen into such a creature's hands.
Save your pity, Charlotte. He's not worth it.
But what are you going to do? This woman must be punished.
Make the name of the Prince of Wales stink in the nostrils of every decent man in Europe?
But, George, we must buy those letters from her. Do anything to save our boy's reputation. She has her price, I suppose.
Yes. A peerage.
What?
Would you care to receive her at court?
George, even to think of such a thing is an insult to me. Is there no other way of getting the letters?
Yes. Failing the peerage, she says she's willing to surrender the bond and the letters for £5,000 and an annuity of £400.
You'll agree to her terms, George. You must, for our boy's sake.
I have every intention of doing so, Charlotte, my dear.
God bless you, George. I don't think you'll regret your action. Perhaps our son will profit by this lesson and alter his unconventional mode of living.
I hope so. If he doesn't, the court of England will become a cesspool of vice when George the Fourth mounts the throne.
In 1788, the colonization of Australia began. 1789 saw the outbreak of the French Revolution. Later, England declared war against the French. In 1796, the Star of Napoleon rose in the firmament. And in 1798, Nelson won the Battle of the Nile. Sometime later, he returned to England accompanied by Sir William and Lady Hamilton. His reception was a mixed one, for many censored his unconventional association with the beautiful Emma Hamilton. At the moment, we find him at the palace, where he's received with frigid politeness by the King and Queen.
My lord, you acquitted yourself nobly at Aboukir. The sinking of the French fleet was a magnificent achievement, one of great naval importance to England in this regrettable war.
I, too, would like to add my congratulations and thanks to those of the Kings. You are a very brave man, Lord Nelson. Your wife must be very proud of you.
I thank your Majesties for your kindness, but I have only done my duty. As for Lady Nelson, yes, she is very proud of the fact that her husband has been raised to the peerage, but for no other reason.
My lord, sarcasm is the wit of fools.
And what greater fool than I, your Majesty, for counting on the friendship and understanding of the man for whom I have fought and would have considered it an honor to die. Good deeds are soon forgotten. A moral digression, seldom, if ever. And if a man once falls from grace, all will tread on him.
My lord, society never forgets nor forgives a man for breaking the laws of decency and decorum. No, even though he be a national hero.
I crave pardon, madam, for offending your Majesty's susceptibilities. But I am a plain man who speaks plain words. And I say openly and for all to hear that I care nothing for the opinion of a society whose own doorstep is none too clean. And now, with your permission, sire, I will remove my unwelcome presence. Tomorrow I shall volunteer for active service again. The people may censor my morals, but they'll never be able to censor my courage.
Would to God that woman had never been born to drag the name of one of England's greatest sons through the filth of the gutter.
Sire, the woman you speak of so contemptuously may yet mold the destiny of this kingdom. Men who go forth to fight must have some ideal to fight for. Emma Hamilton is mine. Her love, the only reward I ask or shall receive for doing my duty to king and country.